Our fifth case for argument this morning is United States against Harju. Ms. Jacobs.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Michelle Jacobs and I represent the United States. The District Court erred in declining to apply the Leon good faith exception in this case. It excluded evidence and applied what the Supreme Court has deemed an extraordinary or extreme sanction that is to be applied rarely, used only to deter police misconduct. This was not such an extreme case. Or such a rare case, and it's for that reason that the United States asks that Judge Adelman's decision be reversed.
Now, Ms. Jacobs, is there anything in the record about this relative from whom the confidential informant received the information? For instance, do we know if it was an ex-wife? Do we know if it was someone who was close to the defendant? Do we know if it was a frequent visitor, an out-of-town relative, a second cousin twice removed, someone with a criminal record herself? Why don't we have any information about this relative or, for that matter, about the confidential informant? It's worrisome to me.
There is nothing in the record, and there was nothing present. What I should say is there was nothing presented in the presentation of the telephonic search warrant about the nature of the relationship between the defendant and either the informant or this family, the relative of the informant. There is not. However, there are a couple of things, and again, I mean, as this court is aware, the government has not appealed the probable cause determination here, only the issue of whether or not the police could reasonably have relied on the search warrant. However, there's a couple of things about this family member that are important. First, the search warrant clearly says that the family member had witnessed this event, had witnessed the defendant waving the gun around. And so right in the search warrant, there's at least some indication that this was a firsthand observation. It wasn't, again, some sort of hearsay or generalized allegation by the relative. Instead, the relative had been present.
But to see you distinguished Peck in your brief on, in part, on the fact that the confidential informant in that case had an axe to grind with the defendant. But we don't know if we have the same problem here. We don't have so much as a drop of information.
Except remember, Judge, that in Peck, the informant came to the police and said he should be arrested, he's dealing drugs as the ex-girlfriend. Clearly had an axe to grind. In this case, regardless, really, of any relationship that might have existed between the defendant and the informant received the information from this third-party relative. That third-party relative was an unwitting. When that telephone call was placed and they discussed the fact that Mr. Harju was waving a firearm around on New Year's, that relative had no idea that she was talking to the police, or he was talking to the police, for that matter. It was a female relative.
I'm sorry.
I apologize.
What if he, it's New Year's. What if he'd been ushering in the new year by firing a starter pistol, you know, the kind that people use at swim meets or track meets, or a toy cap gun? I mean, did the police have any reliable information that made them believe they were dealing with an actual firearm?
I believe that they did. Now, it's not, again, that the relative said this was a 9mm Glock or anything like that. But it was clear that the relative and the informant were concerned about this nephew, this Mr. Griffith, who was also residing at the residence. And they wanted to try to get the informant, actually, to get the gun out of there because they were concerned about his safety. And so there's at least some indication that this relative absolutely believed that this was not a starter pistol or water.
When was the warrant executed? When was the search executed?
It was executed the same day that the warrant was presented to the state court commissioner. I'm not going to come up with a date without looking in the brief, but it's January, I want to say 27th.
How long after the supposed discharge of the weapon?
About 3 weeks. It was about 3 weeks. Now, and I see the court's concern when I say 3 weeks, but again, remember, and I think that this is pointed out in a number of the cases, firearms, and this court has recognized, firearms are not the kind of item that is fungible, you know, typically sold quickly, used like drugs or some other items like that, other contraband. And so in a lot of the cases that Judge Adelman relied on in dealing with the staleness issue, they're talking about drugs. This court has clearly said that firearms are the kinds of things that stay around, that people keep with them. And again, the informant and the relative were concerned at the time of that phone call that that gun was still there and they wanted to have it out of there. Now, but again, this entire discussion, I think, at some level is really the discussion of the notion of whether or not there was probable cause. And I think the discussion itself, and certainly, as I indicated in my brief, Judge Goodstein's decision in reviewing the search warrant and finding that there was probable cause is really so much analogous to Leon. And I say that Leon concludes its opinion by noting that because the search warrant in that case had provided at least enough evidence toward probable cause for there to be disagreement among the judges of the Court of Appeals, that it indicated that kind of the creation of that kind of disagreement between competent, thoughtful judges shows that the Leon good faith exception does apply, that it was at least reasonable.
Is it really your position? Because it really sort of sounds like it, that any time two experienced judges differ in their assessment of the existence of probable cause, that such a disagreement automatically means that we have to apply the good faith exception under Leon?
I think it's pretty strong evidence, Judge Rovner, that that's the case. I'm not sure that I want to go so far as to say that it's an automatic, because if there was some mistake or some misunderstanding of facts or something that could be pointed out in, for example, Judge Goodstein's decision in this case, a real misunderstanding of the record, no, absolutely not. But as the Supreme Court recognizes in Leon, when the purpose of the exclusionary rule is to deter misconduct by law enforcement. And so the question that has to be answered is whether or not a police officer, objectively, in good faith, could reasonably rely on this search warrant. That is the issue, and that's the issue before this court today. And in pointing to Judge Goodstein's decision, I think it demonstrates, that decision demonstrates that there is a reasonable view of the evidence here. There was a reasonable analysis of the evidence that led the state court commissioner and certainly Judge Goodstein to conclude that probable cause existed. And just like the Supreme Court said, when that kind of reasonable disagreement can be created by the evidence, then are the purposes of the Fourth Amendment and are the purposes of the exclusionary rule ever going to be furthered by excluding the evidence? And I would submit that the answer to that is no. If reasonable judges can't agree on whether there was probable cause and there's a good argument that there was, then should we expect police officers to be able to parse through that kind of evidence and parse through the cases in order to conclude that he or she should not have relied on the warrant? I will save my remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Jacobs. Mr. Chiarella.
Good morning. Chris Chiarella on behalf of Mr. Haryu. When I was preparing this argument, I didn't know exactly what I was going to say. I figured I would just try to comment on counsel's statements. And what I first want to start out with is the following. There was a statement by counsel just probably about 30 seconds ago that the purpose of the exclusionary rule is to deter improper police conduct. That's not the only purpose of the exclusionary rule. We know from the vast amount of case law out there that the purpose of the exclusionary rule is also to deter defendants' constitutional rights from being infringed upon. For example, there can be situations where police officers make mistakes. A statement can be obtained from an individual. The police officer can make a mistake in not giving the Miranda rights beforehand. That statement, we know, is not admissible at trial. The exclusionary rule applies. There could be situations where police make mistakes in executing search warrants. Simply, it's not done to deter improper police conduct. It's done to deter that and the fact that we have these important constitutional rights that we do not want infringed upon. There were some statements, some questions by Judge Rovner with regard to...
I'm puzzled, counsel. Introducing the evidence doesn't violate anyone's constitutional rights.
No, I'm sorry.
The only thing one can get at by the exclusionary rule is deterrence. That is, it is a method of trying to deter people from violating the Constitution.
Correct.
It's not itself part of the Fourth Amendment.
Correct. And what I meant to say was that the purpose is not simply to deter improper police conduct.
But that's what the Supreme Court says its purpose is.
But there are certain cases where people's important constitutional rights get infringed upon, and the exclusionary rule applies at certain in certain cases like that. There were questions posed by Judge Rovner with regard to the probable cause aspect of this particular case. And here's the way I look at this. In this particular case, we have an unknown person of unknown reliability who told a confidential informant of unknown reliability that 3 weeks previously, a person who resides at the subject duplex was seen by an unknown person waving an unknown firearm. Now, at this particular point in the affidavit, and I understand that the government is conceding probable cause, but the probable cause aspect in this case I believe I need to touch upon because this panel obviously does not have to abide by the concession of the government. We really don't have much of anything in this particular case to find the following. Number one, that the CI, that this person ever dealt with Detective Clark previously, that this individual ever gave any information which could be determined reliable or corroborative in the past. With regard to the relative, there was some important...
Counsel, let me tell you my problem here. The Supreme Court keeps saying that the main objective is to get the police to take their evidence to a judge and see whether the judge thinks there's probable cause before they go barging in. The police did that. And so far, three judges have looked at this. The state commissioner, the federal magistrate judge, and the federal district judge. Two of the three judges have found that there was indeed probable cause, and the third judge has found otherwise. Under those circumstances, does it make sense to say that no reasonable police officer would have believed that there was probable cause when two of the three judges who have looked at it think that there was probable cause?
Simply because two of the three judges have looked at this and said there was probable cause, I don't believe is of any consequence. The law holds that when you're dealing with information that comes from an informant, that certain things need to be shown. This court has stated that there are certain factors that a judge must look
now,
at.
Look, I can understand the argument that there is no probable cause. We often hold that judges err. We're in a world where at least one and maybe two of the judges who have looked at this so far are in error on that subject. Now, I'm asking the question from the Leon perspective. The Supreme Court's question is whether any reasonable person could have thought that there was a basis for this warrant. And as the Supreme Court said when it issued Leon, we give the police this instruction to go to the judge, normally, unless they're trying to fool the judge or withholding evidence from the judge, they're supposed to accept the judge's decision. Why should we say that when two judges, after reflection, have found probable cause, any well-trained non-lawyer, that is, a police officer, should have known they were wrong?
Mayor...
Yeah, that's the question.
That is the main question with regard to the good faith argument. And I believe, if I can look in my notes, the law is as follows. And I believe this court set forth the law in U.S. v. Kurth at 312 F3rd 862.
Yeah, I'm not asking you to cite cases. I'm asking for a reason. Is there some reason?
Sure, because, well, for this reason, I believe the law to be such that if there have been cases in the past on indistinguishable facts where this court has held that probable cause doesn't exist, simply because two other judges have said that it does exist and because a police officer may have relied upon that, that in and of itself doesn't make it right that good faith saves the warrant. If there have been cases in the past where this court has said or other courts have said that probable cause is not found, why should we allow a court commissioner in Sheboygan County to issue a warrant on something less? That's really what it comes down to.
No, now we're confusing remedies. There might indeed be damages remedies, even when there is not exclusion. But you're effectively saying whenever there is no probable cause, then the evidence must be suppressed. And that just disagrees with Leon. The world of Leon is the world where there is not probable cause, where the magistrate who issued the warrant is wrong, and where nonetheless the evidence is not suppressed. And what we're supposed to be trying to figure out is whether a reasonable person could have believed that. Now, this case was fully briefed before an intelligent U.S. magistrate who, after full deliberation, said there was probable cause. The district judge says otherwise. We may say otherwise. Why should we expect officers on the beat to do better on the spur of the moment than United States magistrate judges after full briefing and argument?
Well, with regard to police officers per se, I don't think we should suggest that police officers should do more. But police officers know when they're out in the field what they need to do. They, especially when we're dealing with confidential informants. I don't know how many times I've looked at affidavits surrounding a search warrant where they go on for 5 or 6 pages about the reliability of the confidential informant and what this person has done for them in the past and so forth. In this particular case, at least with regard to the facts of this case, this police officer, this detective, did nothing.
Yeah, and we know that's not necessary. That's why Gates overruled Aguiar and Spinelli. Now you seem to be saying that the evidence has to be suppressed unless Aguiar and Spinelli have been complied with.
No, well, I guess you're misinterpreting my argument. My argument is simply this.
That's why Aguiar and Spinelli were overruled, to say that a warrant need not contain that information.
My argument is simply this. If this court, or any other court for that matter, has determined on facts indistinguishable from these, where probable cause, where more information was given, that doesn't make it right because some judge, and I'm going to give you a hypothetical, I guess, at this point. Let's assume we have a judge in whatever county in Wisconsin that issues a warrant on less facts than this. Simply because that judge or that court commissioner issues a warrant and the police officer takes it and says, oh, great, now I can go crazy and, you know, look for if the warrant allows for them to search for drugs or weapons, I can go to the house and do whatever. Does that necessarily make it right that in the future that particular court commissioner or that particular judge can go forward and issue those warrants in the future unrestrained by a federal magistrate judge, an eastern district judge, or this court for that matter? I think the answer to that is no. And that's why when I coined the argument in the brief, simply because the magistrate judge has said there was probable cause, I don't believe is binding upon this court because there have been other cases, and the cases that were cited were Wilhelm, I believe Peck, and Kurth, where this court has found that there were much more facts put forward and has disallowed the warrants to stand on a probable cause basis. Having said all that, I have nothing further to add at this point, and I thank you all.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Trella. Anything further?
Your Honors, unless there are further questions, as I indicated at the outset, the government submits that the district court erred in declining to apply the good faith exception. This is not an extreme case, and it's not a rare case. It may not have been the most overwhelming search warrant. I'm not here to say that it was. But nonetheless, there is certainly a basis to apply the Leon good faith exception, and for that reason, I would ask that this court reverse the district court's decision and remand for further proceedings. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.